This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Backlash over House Bill 2 continues. Governor McCrory signed an executive order that claims to modify parts of the controversial measure, but opponents say it's not enough and the law should be repealed. The state remains in national headlines as the short session approaches. How is this going to affect McCrory's reelection bid? And on the national stage, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders went head-to-head last night in what some are calling the most heated debate yet. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins me now. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
It's nice to have a story, at least here in North Carolina, that puts Donald Trump second on the news budget. You know what I'm saying? HB2 still in the news.
Not only is it still in the news, of course, it's a national story, but it is absolutely emblematic of what's going on in the Republican Party nationally. It's the battle between the business interests and the religious conservatives. And Pat McCrory, the governor of North Carolina, is in the middle of it all, and I almost feel sorry for him. It doesn't seem like he signed up for this when he was elected governor, because he was elected as a pro-business, kind of a moderate conservative, but as the legislature moves further to the right, it pulls him along with him, and he's kind of on, he doesn't really know what to do because he can't lose these votes if he's going to get reelected in November.
Well, apparently he doesn't know what to do. He signed on to the legislation within hours of its passage, telling everybody that it would not have an effect on the ability to fight discrimination or your ability to challenge discrimination in the state of North Carolina. And a week later, he said, he says, except for the part that shouldn't have been there. So I'm issuing an executive order that eliminates part of the law that I signed.
Well, remember, it was a year ago where he vetoed a religious freedom measure that the state legislature passed, and the legislature immediately overrode his veto. So he's figuring, he said, what do I do here? I'm boxed in the corner. If I veto it, or if I want to have changes on it, I'm going to lose support in November. But if I embrace it all the way, businesses are going to just, you know, the national response to what's happened with HB 2 around the country is just unyielding, given the possible boycotts, the Bruce Springsteen cancellation, the possible loss of the NBA All-Star game next year. He's in this bind, and he really didn't have much choice of what to do.
Well, here's one of the things that a lot of folks say he could have done, especially given what the polls are showing. 50% of North Carolinians, according to a WRAL poll, say that this bill should be repealed. All right, but it's interesting if you start to look down and you ask separate questions. 56%, over half of the people who are asked, say they like the bathroom provision. They don't object to the bathroom provision, but half of those asked, compared to 36% who say it should stay, say that you should repeal the bill. And that has to do with all of the rest of the stuff that was put into this bill and the fact that nobody had time to see it. So what a veto would have done, of course, would be to make time for debate and say, yes, you can override this, but you're going to have to take some time. And that's what the state of North Carolina seems to be objecting to, if I can read the polls.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that by just dismissing it, or at least labeling it as the bathroom bill, I think you're really ignoring, I mean, people are really ignoring what's also in that bill. It eliminates the local entities like Charlotte, for example, to pass its own anti-discrimination law, to raise the minimum wage, to sue the state for discrimination. It's more than just, you know, transgender people and where they go to the bathroom. It's really more about big government, which is so ironic because the Republican Party is known for, you know, it has always been a foe of big government, liking local control. But this basically is taking local control away from many cities and municipalities around the state.
And a measure that has nothing whatever to do with any of it, but prohibits cities from mandating contractors to pay a living wage, which had nothing to do with any of it and wasn't even debated. And that was part of the law. And that's some of what I think we're seeing when you ask people in the polls what they object to.
And I kind of think that had he shown objections to it, he would have gotten his head handed to him the way he did last year with the religious liberty bill. I think he just kind of thought maybe I'll sign it and it'll go away quietly. It is not going away quietly.
No, and then he issues an executive order, and it's not clear whether it's an order or a suggestion, but an executive order that does dismantle or suggest that he doesn't like part of the bill. But it comes 2 weeks later, and here's his rationale.
You know, after listening to people's feedback during the past several weeks on this issue, I have come to the conclusion that there's a great deal of misinformation, misinterpretation, confusion, passion, and frankly, selective outrage and hypocrisy, especially against the great state of North Carolina. But based on this feedback, I am taking action to affirm the state's commitment to privacy and equality.
That people are misinformed, but I want to take back part of the bill. Where does this leave him politically in the state? I mean, again, full support for the bill, actually carrying the water and being the chief defender of this this law, and then backpedaling on some of the parts, as you say, in the religious right that they don't want to see him backpedal on. Where's it going?
I can't get into Pat McCrory's head, but somehow I feel he knew this was a loser, a political loser from day one. There was no real necessity for it other than the fact that people were upset that Charlotte passed its own anti-discrimination bill. I kind of feel that McCrory wishes that such a bill was not passed, but he almost felt like he had no choice but to go along with it. And then to have to retract a couple of weeks later, you know, it reminds me, Governor Mike Pence in Indiana last year, they passed this religious freedom bill that basically protected religious liberty, supposed to do what you want against gay and lesbians, which, of course, the religious right loved in Indiana. And then he got this national backlash. Then a week, you know, talking about boycotts by businesses in the state, Indiana was really getting its head handed to him, to itself. And then about a week later, Mike Pence says, well, you know something, there's a perception problem. A lot of people misunderstand what the bill is, so I'll make it softer, so I'll change it around. Mike Pence, of course, was talking about running for president. He wasn't running for re-election for governor when this happened. McCrory is, and I think he's just in a bind. And I think right now, I mean, I think the November election could very well be a referendum on HB2.
All right, well, let's change gears a little bit and talk about the presidential race. Very heated and contentious debate between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Should we have expected this? Things have been heating up generally in that race.
Yeah, well, I mean, what do they think? They are Republicans. I mean, they fight like they're Republicans now. Look, there's anger, there's tension, but there's also frustration. Hillary Clinton has lost the last 7 primaries, 8 of the last 9, and she says, wait a second, I'm supposed to be the shoo-in for the nomination. Why is this happening? And then Bernie Sanders is saying, if I'm winning all these primaries and caucuses, why am I not gaining on her? Why are all these superdelegates going away from me? So there was great frustration, great tension, and of course it came 5 days before Tuesday's New York primary, which is very consequential, and so, you know, once upon a time, there were polite differences between the two. Remember in the first debate, Bernie Sanders says, I don't want to talk about her damn emails. But now it is personal. It is sarcastic. And you talk about whether the Republican Party could unite in time for November. Right now, the Democratic Party didn't seem too united last night.
Well, and here's where Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump have a lot in common. They both think the system is rigged.
That's absolutely true. I mean, for different reasons, obviously, the Republican leadership, see, that's the only difference is that the Republican leadership, whatever that is, will do everything it can to deny Donald Trump the Republican nomination, whereas on the Democratic side, this party leadership wants Hillary Clinton, and that's probably why all these superdelegates are going her way. And Bernie Sanders says it's thwarting the will of the people. But in fairness to Hillary Clinton, she still has the most votes. She still has won the most primaries. She probably would be a stronger candidate in November, but she doesn't have the passion. Her supporters don't have the passion, certainly, that they give for Bernie Sanders.
You talked about healing the divisions both in both parties. But is it the same? I'm wondering, because the attacks certainly from Bernie Sanders against Hillary Clinton, we'd say the nominal challenger in that race, are coming from the left. So ultimately, you know, your choice when there is finally a candidate would be one of those two. Would it be easier for the Democrats to heal and come together over and against a Republican Party that really has a populist candidate standing outside of the framework of left and right polarities?
No, I agree with you completely. Plus the fact that the Republican front runner has spent much of his year attacking fellow Republicans. I mean, everybody from President Bush to John McCain to all these Republicans up and down the line, whereas Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, for the most part, is about issues. It is about guns. It is about Wall Street. It is about the minimum wage. It did seem personal last night, more so than most debates between the two of them. But ultimately, I think it'll be easier for the Democrats to unite than it is for the Republicans.
Well, and don't you think that's the attacks that Republicans have made on each other are precisely the things that divide Republicans versus the attacks that Bernie's made on Hillary Clinton? I mean, saying that she's in the pocket of Wall Street doesn't make Ted Cruz look any better to a voter, right? I mean, you know, if that's the problem, then the Republicans don't score any higher on that.
Well, there's truth in that, but I think the ultimate irony is that when you look at if the likely nominees in November are Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, both have net unfavorables in their popularity polls and their numbers, and it's hard to remember the last time you saw two general election candidates with such high negatives running against each other.
All right. I want to take us briefly back to North Carolina since we're talking about polls. Roy Cooper is polling ahead of Pat McCrory for the first time. It's a very small margins in most of the polls, 2%, 3%, sometimes 4%. And it does. Do you think that HB2 plays a part, and will it carry into November?
Well, of course, this is April. We still have a long way to go. But I think I've always thought that the battle between McCrory and Cooper is basically a referendum on what the Republican legislature has done regarding voting rights and business outlook. And if business starts to look at what happened with HB2 and says that it may not be a good thing for North Carolina, and if business starts to throw its support to Cooper, who has battled business interests for so many years as Attorney General, that could really change the dynamic. And look, North Carolina's will be close in the presidential race. It has been the last two times. I think this is going to be a very close and closely watched gubernatorial race, but right now, if I were betting money, I would bet on Roy Cooper. But again, we have many months to go.
Lots of time. Ken Rudin, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Frank.
Find out more about the political junkie Ken Rudin at our website, stateofthings.org. Just had a conversation with sci-fi writer Ernest Cline on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.